Hey everyone, welcome back to Talking Beasts. I'm Glumpuddle.
And I'm Rillian.
And I'm Fantasia Kitty.
And Fantasia Kitty, you've got somebody with you.
Yes, I do. This is my son, Evan. Can you say hi?
Hi.
Hello, Evan.
Welcome to the podcast, Evan. Thank you so much for taking time out of your busy day to be on the show today.
He nodded.
So the reason Evan is here today is because it's sort of a conversation that we actually started as part of our Eclipse moot. You were not a part of this, Rillian. You had abandoned us at that point. But
true.
We were talking about...
going back to Underworld.
many sink down. We were talking about what is... basically, what's appropriate for children in terms of violence and sexuality and things like that. And why is violence something we are, why do we worry about, you know, there's always the risk of children being scared by certain things in movies, and why is it bad when children get scared, and kind of what's appropriate for children. And what's interesting about that, of course, is Rillian, you're a new dad.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And Fantasia Kitty, you're a mother of three now. And I'll probably, you know, children are probably in my future, at some relatively near future at some point. That's not an announcement of any kind. That's just, that's probably in my near future.
Mrs. Glumfuddle would be very upset if it were. This is how I announced it.
So I thought, I'm just interested in, you know, so this is something that, you know, Fantasia Kitty, you've already thought about for a while. What can I show my kids and such? And really, and it's something you're going to, if you haven't, you're going to have to figure out fairly soon here. So I'm interested in getting your perspectives on this. So really quick, well, we've got Evan here.
Here, Evan. They're going to ask you questions.
We'll wait for Evan to get his headphones back on.
There we go.
How you doing, Evan?
Good.
So I'm just curious, Evan. Evan, do you have a favorite movie? What's your favorite movie?
Lightning McQueen.
Lightning McQueen. That's Cars.
So is there anything, let's just cut to the chase here. Evan, is there anything you've ever seen in a movie that has scared you, that you thought was really scary?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Tell me, what have you seen that you thought was scary?
That William hit me.
Oh, when somebody got hit? Yeah.
Some people get hit, you think that's scary? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because they get hurt. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Evan, how old are you again?
Say, my birthday is in 6 days.
What?
My birthday is in 6 days.
And how old are you going to be?
Five.
Oh, cool.
Well, congratulations. You'll get a handful right there. That's five. So, how about some books? What's your favorite book?
Curious George.
Curious George.
Curious George.
Curious George.
What do you like about Curious George?
Curious George takes a job.
You like it when he took a job?
Okay.
And what did he do when he took a job? Did he wash windows? What happened after he painted a room?
He went down the stairs.
He went down the stairs, and then what happened?
He broke his leg.
He broke his leg and he had to go to the hospital, didn't he?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Was that kind of scary when he broke his leg? Mm-hmm. Yeah, because he got in trouble.
So I was going to ask about that. Yeah. So you thought, did you think it was funny or did you think it was scary when Curious George broke his leg?
Scary.
Thought it was scary? Well, let me ask you, and Evan, let me ask you, have you seen any of the Chronicles of, well, I guess, well, let me get to this in order. Have you read any of the Narnia books, Evan?
No. Nope, not yet.
Yeah. At what point do you think he's ready for that, Fantasia Kitty?
I think Evan is ready now. I haven't started them yet because I have two more coming up that are not ready. And I don't know if I was thinking that I wanted to read them to all of them at once or if I wanted to go ahead and read them to Evan now and then read them again later on. But yeah, that's really the only reason I have not read them yet.
Mom.
Yes, baby.
Drink.
Get you a drink. I think we're about done. Do you want to go?
Yeah, I think we're about. Thank you so much for joining us, Evan. Thank you for your valuable insight.
Can you say thank you?
Thank you.
Thanks,
bye,
Evan.
Can you say bye?
Bye.
All right.
Bye. Okay. And do you have to pause to get him a drink, or are we good?
Evan, do you want to go get a drink on your own? Okay, go find Daddy and tell him that you need a drink. Thank you, Evan.
Cool. So just thought that'd be fun. Thank you so much, Fantasia Kitty.
You're welcome.
So the issue of what, you know, kind of what our target audience is for Chronicles of Narnia comes up from time to time. And for example, would a PG-13 Narnia film, would that be such a bad thing? And I think some people react with, no, that'd be blasphemy because, you know, children and adults, all ages enjoy Chronicles of Narnia, so you can't make a PG-13 Narnia film. And to be more specific, let's just say a Lord of the Rings level of violence. If someone made a movie, obviously sure. Lord of the Rings is not geared for kids. So, you know, what would you guys think if someone made a Chronicles of Narnia movie that was on clearly on the Lord of the Rings kind of target audience sort of level? What would your reaction to that be? And I guess I'll start with you, Rillian.
My reaction would be it's I don't think Lewis would appreciate it, and I think he'd be right not to, because you think about what are the books in essence on one level they're children's books that are written for adults to be able to enjoy as well. And adults do enjoy them. And you could argue that adults enjoy them more, or at least on a deeper level, than children do. And I think that there's certainly, there are a lot of films that are made for children that you can maybe point to that follow in that tradition. So I think that they need to be accessible really on both levels. They need to be written for, like, this is a children's story. Because you could take, really, I mean, you could have taken The Lion, the Witch, in the Wardrobe and made it a PG-13 or an R rating easily if you wanted to, just on the violence level. So you can always go there if you really want to. And I understand there's an argument to be made for darker films like The Last Battle, but and that would be the one where I'd be most comfortable with that argument being made, say, for the PG-13 rating. Part of the problem is the ratings become so politicized because studios have realized that the biggest moneymaker tends to be the PG-13 rating, and that's largely because they can get younger kids in, and the adults still are willing to say, oh well, it must be not so kiddish that I could at least watch it. I mean, even when there wasn't a PG-13 rating, I mean, I think the movie Chariots of Fire was going to be G-rated, and they said, well, this will never get the publicity or an Oscar nomination or anything unless we make it at least PG. So we need to throw one swear word in there. So I threw one swear word in the movie to make it PG just so that it would become PG to get a better
audience.
Yeah,
that's why I sort of, rather than just saying a PG-13 Narnia film, I'm trying to be more specific and say, and just in terms of content, never mind the rating, but Lord of the Rings level of violence, and where it's clearly not in, it's not, you know.
I think that it would lose the children. I think that it would... I mean, if children can't benefit from the stories, why are you telling them on film? I think is the biggest question I would ask. If they you make it so violent to the point that adults can appreciate it, but children can't because they're going to be too frightened, or it's just generally maybe inappropriate for little children. When I say little children, I'm talking about like in the age like 7, 8, 9, 10 level to enjoy, which I think is a target audience for The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe and so on. I think that you have to ask, why are you adapting it to film in the first place if you're not going to try to reach the similar audience?
Which goes back to a conversation we had on Facebook earlier today, which maybe we'll circle back to here shortly. But Fantasia Kitty, what do you think of that? What would be your reaction if you read, let's say you read Evan, The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, and then, oh, but sorry, the movie is not for you?
Well, my thought for the PG-13 rating depends entirely on which book. I think the first six should be PG, but The Last Battle, I'm not sure that they can do that one justice without a PG-13 rating. That ending is so dark, and especially, am I allowed to say spoilers on here?
No, you're good.
Especially you're good. When the dwarves start shooting the horses, and I will never be able to forget the line when it's either the bear or the boar dies. I think it's the bear. And he says, I don't understand. And then he dies. And I'm like, "That I don't think you can do that movie in a PG rating. I really don't. I think if they did, it would be so toned down that it would lose its effectiveness as a story.
Well, going into specific scenes, what about something like, for example, Prince Caspian? There's a moment where Peter kills Thespian.
Sure.
And literally Lewis writes, Peter swung to face Thespian, slashed his legs from under him, and with the back cut of the same stroke, walloped off his head.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, in the Focus on the Family radio drama, I think they changed that to hit him in the head.
Yeah.
So that was
even
too intense for a radio drama.
Well, what's really interesting to me is that when I saw Prince Caspian, I felt that that was probably really pushing the PG-13 rating, and I know for me the
it was
part
towing
that
line
that was PG-13 yeah. was the night raid when half of the Narnians are trapped in the castle, and even though you don't see them die, you know they die. And
which
I thought that was
worse in some ways, I think, to know
was,
and not see is almost more effective.
Right. I thought that was pretty dark. But I remember afterwards, a lot of the reviews, boy, that when it was clear that Izzet Sepespian loses his head and they took out the head, all you see is the
helmet
rolling. Yeah,
in the movie, I think it's just a random soldier. I don't think it's not Glizelle or Sepespian.
Okay.
But it is like you see a close-up of Peter swinging, and then you see a helmet.
Right.
And the next shot, and actually the MPAA asked them to extend that shot for about a second so you could see there's not actually a head. It is
right.
just a helmet.
But I don't think
it's
kind of
wobbling back and forth.
I mean,
can you extend the shot by about a second so the audiences can see there's not a head in there?
Yeah, I remember the reviews afterwards. People were absolutely crazy that they took their kids to see that movie and that shot was in there. Even without the head, you knew what had happened and it was a PG rating and they felt it was definitely PG-13.
Mm-hmm.
It's so, like you just pointed out, the MPAA wanted, hey, can you extend it for 1 second? Because it's very, very technical, and you hear about films getting submitted for edits and edits and edits to get just the right thing. Because even in Lord of the Rings, they said the reason they were able to get away with the PG-13 rating is because the orcs have black blood. And if they had shown red blood for all the orcs, they said there was no way they would have ever gotten away with the PG-13 rating.
It's so funny, the little things, you know? I mean, and that's the reason, actually, that's the reason that George Lucas gave the Stormtroopers helmets, and that's the reason why they gave the Telmarines helmets as well. So it would make it easier to get that PG rating.
Well, part of the difficulty is, and here's what I wonder, I'm trying to think of times the MPAA has addressed just the mood and the darkness of a scene, because, like, for example, the Night Raid in Prince Caspian, you can imagine.
Yeah, that's more about the emotions. It's less about what you actually see. In fact, it's what you don't see.
Because you can imagine, I can imagine looking at those as precedents, looking at, say, scenes in the last battle, doing that with a similar level of violence to get the PG rating. But then if it's extremely dark and you're still dealing with the subject of, you know, mass casualties, how do you, how is that addressed? I just don't know.
Yeah, how do you feel, I guess I'm more, rather than just the rating, because that's one issue is, well, what should the movie be rated? And there's a lot, as you talked about, really, there's a lot of politics that go into that sometimes. But how about just starting with us as fans of the Chronicles of Narnia? Like, what if, for example, the scene I just read were straight from the book where Peter decapitates Sepespian? And even the choice of the word, you know, Lewis says he walloped off his head. I mean, there's more conservative ways Lewis could have kind of expressed that. So, I mean, what if they really had done that scene where you totally see it? You see blood, you see a headless body, and would fans have been saying, how dare you adapt this scene? How dare you put on film exactly what was in the book? Is that what would have been said? I mean,
probably.
What would your guys' reaction be as fans of the book?
Well, because, frankly, you know, if that scene's in a book, you know, a child's mind kind of self-moderates so that it's – not, I mean, I don't remember any of that being too graphic for me as a child, or any of my siblings. I'm trying to remember how old we were. Maybe, because my dad read it to us over, you know, multiple times. Probably the first time I might have been 7. Maybe when my younger brother would have been 5. I think the first time we would have heard that line. And it's not like that would be the same level of gore as an ISIS video, you know, where they're actually doing it. Mm-hmm. So your mind doesn't show the same thing.
I would agree. I think that that's, you know, this is probably jumping ahead in the subject a little bit, but there's something about reading something versus seeing something that I'm definitely willing to read much darker and more violent stuff as opposed to movies. Like, movies will really bother me. I admit right up front that I'm kind of a wimp when it comes to movies. And so, but I can read a lot of that and it doesn't bother me too much. And I think that's why, because especially when I was little, I had no reference for how graphic and violent it was for somebody to lose their head. I would hear, okay, this guy gets his head cut off. Okay. So he's headless and he's dead. And okay. No big deal. We didn't like him anyways. Who cares? So, it wasn't like, you know, you don't hear about the guy screaming in agony as they like saw through all of the membranes. It's not like that. Uh-huh. It's just real quick and not painless, and that's
a cool thing you can do with a book that Lewis often takes advantage of, is the fact that you can get the meaning and the idea of something, and sort of Lewis does a good job at controlling what details we get and what details he don't, and often encourages us to fill in details for ourselves. And this is something where you can, it is a weird thing a book can do that a movie kind of can't, where not in the same way, where you know what happened. It's like you can say, oh, someone got their head cut off, and you can process the fact that it happened without necessarily seeing it in all its detail. And I guess you can do similar things, I guess, in a movie where you don't quite show it. But it's amazing how you can just mentally kind of blur something in a book. It's a really it's a limitation that can be used to great effect. But I guess what I would ask for you guys,
I was just going to say, throw it out. It allows an author to really go more places if you think about it, because there's all kinds of things you can in a book. You can throw in maybe some horrible thing that happens to a character, you know, but you can describe it in as much or little detail as you want, but you can still convey it in the story, and the impact can still be there. And sometimes it's difficult to do that in a film, or maybe it's not even so difficult, but maybe the filmmakers have a desire to, well, here, let's just show it.
Mm-hmm. Sure. I agree. I would also ask though, for you guys as parents, like if Evan did see it, let's say they really did, you know, Sepespian getting decapitated, you know, in all its gory details. Let's just, you know, not assume anything. Why is that a bad thing for Evan to see that? And for the record, I do agree that probably it would not be appropriate for, you know, a 5-year-old to see that. But for, you know, Hendaya Kitty, as a parent, why not? Why would you not want Evan to see something like that at age 5?
You know, that's actually a really tough question. And you asked me this a few weeks back, and I have thought about it and thought about it and thought about it, and I haven't come up with a good answer for you. The closest I have been able to come up with is, for me, exposure to violence or whatever, I personally like there to be a moral to the story in order to, I guess, justify that level of violence. And I thought of an example for you, and you guys are going to love this one. I saw Raiders of the Lost Ark when I was pretty young. And dun, I was dun, doing dun. Okay with that movie until they opened the Ark of the Covenant and their faces melt off. And then I had nightmares for weeks and weeks. And to this day, I still have a hard time watching that movie, even though now when I see it, it's just special effects. And I thought, well, what did I learn from that movie? I was like, well, I guess I learned that if I ever come across the Ark of the Covenant, don't open it. So, whereas something like a good old classic fairy tale, like The Boy Who Cried Wolf, that's, you know, that's pretty violent. The kid gets eaten at the end because he tells lies. But I like that one because there's a good moral to the story. So that's probably the closest answer I can give you to the question on allowing children to be exposed to violence, at least at this early age. I think later on, it changes. You get the adrenaline rush and the enjoyment from seeing the new and going a little farther than you had before. But
Yeah, I think I think you touched on something there as kind of a thought I had. Whereas I think in the case of Evan, he probably. Like, the big factor for me is, does a child have the ability to understand why this is happening and why are people dying? And I think, like, with Lord of the Rings, my guess is I might be okay with a kid seeing Lord of the Rings at a younger age than most people would, because for me it is pretty clear, oh, I get it. These are the good guys. These are the bad guys. And there is a sense of, you know, it's generally the good guy. I think you can just kind of tell it's the bad guys that really want to hurt people, and the good guys, they don't really want to. But I don't know. I think you do get a sense of right and wrong, good and evil in there. I think it's when you have scenes like, I think The Matrix is a great movie, but there are scenes in that movie where they have to kill a lot of cops, a lot of police officers. And that is something where I don't want kids seeing that, because it's really complicated to explain why are the good guys shooting police officers. You know, it's too complicated and too of a morally ambiguous place where I don't think they have the ability to process what they're looking at. And that's probably the case of sexuality as well. It's just a matter of they don't have the ability to really understand what is happening and why. And I think that's where you have the potential for actual long-lasting harm. In my opinion, if a kid has a few nightmares, and again, I'm not a parent yet, so maybe I'll change my mind. Just think, and you can respond, either of you can respond to this if you want. If a kid has a nightmare or two, is that really the end of the world? Like, I watched E.T. when I was little, and that gave me nightmares for the longest time.
Really?
I don't think I... Yeah, and I don't... I
mean, it was
I don't
Invasion
think
of
any
the Body Snatchers.
They're already here! But I don't think any real lasting damage was done from me having a few nightmares about E.T. But I do think there could be damage done when you see something and you misinterpret it because you don't really have the mental capacity and the information to understand what's happening and what the context is. So I think that's the key thing there. And so when you see something that is really disturbing, like a decapitated body, and you don't... I guess it's a situation where the details don't really add anything to the story in that case. It's just the fact that he died. It's not seeing all the gory details doesn't really add anything to it. Where, like you mentioned the last battle example, that really does add something to the story. When you realize what Narnia is losing right now, to see the horses die and see the bear say, "I don't understand." And maybe another example would be Erebus, the way Aslan wounds her. Because the whole idea is that he wounds her in the same way that the servant that she... That she drugged, in the same way that she got, that she was whipped. So it accomplishes something for the story. So that seems to be the big factor for me.
Kind of like what Fantasia Kitty hit on. And Fantasia Kitty, if I start to misrepresent what you said, please correct me. But I think part of what you were hitting on is that we shouldn't depict, because in real life, violence does not occur in a moral vacuum. Violence doesn't just happen. It's like there's either a good or immoral context surrounding it, whether it's some kind of punishment or maybe someone defending themselves or maybe it's someone victimizing someone else. There's always that moral context in real life that people need to understand. And so I don't think it's a problem to make sure that for young kids who don't really understand certain things yet, anything they see in a story, say, like, it could be, I think you said, which fairy tale did you bring up again?
The Boy Who Cried Wolf.
The Boy Who Cried Wolf. You'll take that versus, even say something like The Matrix, which is more morally vague. You need to make sure that kids understand that moral context. And I think the other thing to consider is each, at least this is going to my personal experience with two brothers, each of us were different. In terms of how we responded to things, that maybe some parents have, each child is going to be different. And I even noticed with some of my friends, just my personal observation, I could watch, I saw my parents fast forwarded two scenes in the movie Glory with Denzel Washington and Morgan Freeman and Matthew Broderick and Cary Elwes. Great movie. It's a Civil War film. I watched that. I was probably 13. They fast-forwarded two scenes that you could argue maybe would have made it PG-13, but it's a very sad, violent movie. It's a war film, but they, for us it was there's a lot of, it's very, considered to be very accurate to the Civil War, and so it was a very powerful lesson. Contrast that with, say, the movie Shrek. I think my parents didn't let me watch that for a while because they knew that for some reason, anytime I heard a joke, probably because I'm not a very funny person and I shamelessly steal jokes, anything I heard that was crude or bad language or stuff, I would very quickly imitate as a kid. Like any crude joke I heard, I just didn't get it. I didn't understand. I guess I just wanted to be funny. So I would, so they really had to tone back certain things I heard in a film, whereas maybe other things, it didn't really traumatize me. It didn't give me nightmares. I didn't become more violent. I maybe was more mature on that level, whereas on other levels, I was less mature. And so they knew that maybe your other friends can watch that movie and they're not just going to use the bad language, but you just can't seem to, restrict yourself. So they were more guarded with me in that respect. Because I think of how I personally was made up, and this isn't like a particular age. This is like different layers, different ages going through childhood. But so I think there's a certain amount of aspects where you have to kind of tailor it to the kid.
Sure, absolutely. I think sure you would agree with that.
Yeah, absolutely.
The kid is a mother, right? That yep. Of course it depends on the kid. Lewis, by the way, Pat wrote a really great essay where he talked about this at great length called Three Ways of Writing for Children. And I think Yeah, and obviously it is tough because it does depend on the kid, but we have to kind of speak broadly about it, or what are kind of the central issues.
We'll get back to the discussion shortly. I'm William O'Flaherty. This is a C.S. Lewis Minute. As a layperson, Lewis preached only a handful of sermons, but they were so well liked that those published in his lifetime are still in print today. Few ministers remember or want to remember their first sermon. While C.S. Lewis wasn't a preacher, he did occasionally stand in the pulpit. His first effort was so well liked that it was published in Famous English Sermons. That book only came out less than a year after Lewis preached his debut message. Today the sermon is known as Learning in Wartime and can be found in the Weight of Glory collection of essays book. Interestingly enough, Lewis's final sermon, A Slip of the Tongue, is found in the same collection. Also, the title of the book is one of his messages given at church. Learn more about C.S. Lewis by visiting my website, EssentialCSLewis.com.
And I think one of the things, and Lewis wrote that, of course, he was talking about books, but he said, "Let there be wicked kings and beheadings, battles and dungeons, giants and dragons, and let villains be soundly killed at the end of the book. Nothing will persuade me that this causes an ordinary child any kind or degree of fear beyond what it wants or needs to feel. For, of course, it wants to be a little frightened." Which brings us back to when kids get frightened by things. You know, like when I was little, the White Witch actually really scared me. But so at what point have we crossed the line where, like, you know, I talked about, oh, I had a nightmare from E.T., but so what? But at what point are you actually doing lasting damage where this is a scary monster. You don't want, I don't want my child to see this scary monster. And of course, if we're going to really faithfully adapt the Chronicles of Narnia, we're going to come across some really scary monsters. And, you know, at the end of Silver Chair, the witch turns into a snake, and they cut off her head, and it's a horrible mess, Lewis describes it as. So, Fantasia Kitty, where's the line for you as far as not wanting to frighten your kids?
I don't even know. I know that, like, what damage does it do? I don't even know because it's like, so many of those fears aren't even realistic. And the ones that you do want to instill in them, like, don't take candy from strangers. It's like, there's a good reason to make them scared of taking candy from strangers. So I don't know, like, what kind of bad lasting damage. And the only example I can think of is a fictional one, which is Batman, where he falls into the cave and gets swarmed by bats. But in the movie, that turns into a good thing. So,
right. And I don't want to pretend like just because I don't consciously know about, you know, nightmares I had as a kid affecting me, maybe they did, though. You know, I may not be consciously aware of it, but they still could.
If you use the phrase lasting damage, that can't be really the only metric to look at. Because, for example, I brought up The Invasion of the Body Snatchers. This old classic 1950s film. People now make metaphors with, oh, yeah, the metaphor of communism, stuff like that. But, yeah, it's about these aliens that come down and basically take over people's minds. And it is kind of a creepy film, even as an adult. But watching it as a kid, you know, I was terrified. I had dreams and couldn't sleep well for a month. There was no lasting damage from that, but I didn't really gain anything morally from the film, and it certainly scared me for a good month. So if I knew that my child was going to react the same way, even though I wouldn't really believe there was going to be lasting damage, I wouldn't let him watch it or her watch it if I thought they were going to react the exact same way.
Yeah, the parents get to lose sleep too because they're up comforting their child who doesn't want to go to sleep. So
there's a factor I don't think about, not having kids yet. That's a good point. And what you said about there really being nothing to gain from it, really, and made me think of something else Lewis wrote. C.S. Lewis wrote, "Since it is so likely that children will meet cruel enemies, let them at least have heard of brave knights and heroic courage." I think that's something to keep in mind about. If we really want to show children examples of real heroes, we also have to show them real villains who do terrible and maybe scary things. And I think in Narnia you have both, which I really appreciate. As far as adaptation, though, this kind of goes back to a conversation we were having earlier about The Lion King, really. But so I asked you at the beginning of the podcast, if someone made a Narnia film that felt like it was more adult-oriented, would that bother you? And you guys seem pretty, you know, generally towards, no, you wouldn't like that. I'm just not sure because, I mean, the fact is, I am an adult. And if they made a Narnia film that was just completely geared towards me, I feel like I would probably enjoy it. Now, there's the other issue if we want to look at it not as selfishly and say, but is that appropriate to take a popular book or, you know, children's literature, such an important book, and do something that is, I mean, obviously the books are meant to appeal to all ages, and they do that really effectively. And Lewis wrote that, you know, a children's story that is enjoyed in childhood but not adulthood is probably not a good children's story and probably should not have been read to begin with. But so, like, putting aside that issue for a second of, is that responsible to do that with a beloved work of literature? At the end of the day, I go see a movie and either I like it or I don't. And if someone made a movie that was even more geared towards my demographic, then it seems like I would probably enjoy it. And kind of where it connects with what we were talking about, really, and is no one's gonna take away the book. You still have the book. It's not like this is going to be a replacement for the book. It's not like we have to go no one's making the book more adult oriented. They're just releasing another version of it. Hey, that sounds more worthwhile to me. If you're going to make an exact copy of the book, what's the point of even making it?
So there's a couple things going on. One, there's the aspect of the correct, almost like, is this a correct adaptation? I don't really know if you can measure that in any possible way. This was the correct adaptation, or this is the incorrect way to adapt it. There is the issue of it being appropriate for children. Like, well, is it bad to make if it's inappropriate for children? Like, well, you know, it's going to have a rating and stuff. It's either going to be appropriate for children, and you'll say so. If it's not, and you should say it's not. It really comes down to a certain extent, a matter of preference. What would you prefer to see? I mean, maybe you would prefer, I mean, harkening back to if you listen to the early podcast where you read part of the King Solomon's Mines reference that Lewis described.
Yeah.
Maybe you have a preference for a movie that speaks to you more in that way with more excitement. And you would rather see mm-hmm. that in a movie. And you say, hey, maybe a lot of people want that too, not just me. So maybe it makes sense. And hey, it adds something new and we'd enjoy it more. Maybe so. Again, it kind of goes back to a question of why do you want to adapt the book? And I think a key aspect is, do you want to accomplish something similar with the book that Lewis did with the movie that Lewis did with the book? And I think it gets to a point, it's kind of like saying, well, let's make The Lord of the Rings, but let's make it G-rated. It's hard to say that you might even be telling the same story or accomplishing a lot of the same storytelling. So it kind of comes down to preference. I'll fully admit that. Maybe I would prefer to have a book that's more maybe accessible to the same audience, or at least a similar audience. I keep saying book and movie, interchanging them. But maybe I'd like to have a movie that's accessible to the same audience or similar audience that the book was. And maybe I'm fully ready to admit that that's my preference and that it's not like a right or wrong way to do it. But again, at some point, you can make a story that's so different, or when you're appealing to current audiences' mass tastes, you can get to the point where you ask the question, well, why were we making this in the first place? And there could be different reasons for why you're making it in the first place. So maybe that's the first question is, okay, why do you want to make this in the first place? And if the answer, say, as the somehow grandmaster builder of the movie storyteller is saying, well, my reason for making The Silver Chair is I want to take these stories, but I want to tell them in an adult way for an adult audience with adult style storytelling in a way that adults will most appreciate. I could say, cool, fine. I hope it works out well
for
you.
Or maybe there's some theme in the book. Maybe there's a theme in the book that you want to explore in more depth that will get you into PG-13 kind of territory.
Yeah, but you can't. You can't ignore that. That's a bit at the sacrifice of accessibility for younger audiences. So you can say that, but to a certain extent, I'm just going to say my preference is I probably won't really care to go see it if that's really the philosophy behind it.
Whereas, I mean, bottom line, I'm gonna go see it if I think it looks good, if I think it looks like a movie I would enjoy, and if I enjoy the movie, I enjoy the movie. And I think the question of, but does it appeal? If I go see a Chronicles of Narnia movie and it speaks to me and I have a moving experience with it, then I'm gonna say I liked it. And then you say, oh, but didn't you hear that? You know, there were a lot of 5-year-olds that were upset by it. That's not gonna change my rating of the movie. It's, well, I liked it. I enjoyed it. It spoke to me. And I think it is a separate question of would I like them to make a Chronicles of Narnia adaptation that can speak to all ages in the same way that the book does? Yes, I would. I would like that to be the case. But that's kind of a separate question for me. Does that make sense? Where it's, I mean, at the end of the day, I'm going to go see the movie. I'm going to give the rating that I give it.
I can think of some great films that I can say were terrible adaptations.
Sure.
I can think of some films I really enjoyed.
But even like,
is that an adaptation? No, not at all.
Is it even a bad adaptation though, if that happens? It's okay. They took a children's book and they decided, hey, I want to explore something in it that requires me to go into sort of PG-13 territory. So they adapted it into something that if it works, it works. Anyway, that gets into the whole.
Yeah, I think that gets into like how they advertise it, which is a whole different
thing. And that's even another level of it.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm not saying I want them to make it, for the record, I'm not saying I want them to make a Narnia film that's more violent or anything like that. I do think they probably, like with the Silver Chair, I do think we need at least a light PG-13 rating, because I just think it's, at the end of the movie, I think it's right that the Lady of the Green Kirtle's death be kind of, Lewis describes it as a terrible mess. And there is something about, I haven't given it tons of thought, but her demise being messy that feels right to me. Maybe it's because her disguise is she's this beautiful woman. She's so elegant. And then she sort of reveals her true self when she becomes the snake. So there's something about her demise being kind of messy and violent that rings true for me, which kind of goes back to what you were talking about, Fantasia Kitty, with ultimately you just have to do what you have to do to tell the story. And like there's stuff in The Last Battle where probably to really tell this story right, we probably have to make things a little more intense.
I think for me, as far as the ratings go, I know I personally have kind of stopped even looking at ratings anymore because I feel so betrayed by so many movies that say, oh, it's rated PG. And I go watch them and it's like, this is not a PG movie.
Yeah, for me, it's been a while since I really gave a rating a ton of thought.
Case
going
in
to
point,
see a movie.
Prince Caspian was rated the same as The Matrix in, I believe, Australia.
That's crazy.
Yeah, so that there's a certain point. I am very sympathetic to, well, hey, just try to adapt and make the scene the best scene you can. And let the chips kind of fall where they may. To a certain extent, I'm sympathetic to that. Even though it's kind of sad at some point, I think, well, even if it's a light PG-13, you know, there's going to be people that won't bring their kids. Or maybe not. Maybe parents don't care anymore. I'm sure that, you know, the next Star Wars movie is PG-13. There's going to be tons of kids that are going to that.
Uh-huh. I think really, ultimately, parents need to go preview the movie before they take their kids. So.
Yeah.
Well, how practical is that really, though? I mean, anytime you take a kid to see a movie, of course, you're taking a risk. And that's kind of – that's one of those things, too, where if you talk about violence and even sexuality, we're talking about things that, like it or not, our kids are going to be exposed to at some point. And this is just really easy to say, but you in particular, Fantasia Kitty, curious what you think about this. It just seems like there's so many things that our kids are going to be exposed to inevitably. So we have two options. Either let them get exposed to it, who knows where. If they have questions, who knows who's going to be there to answer them. Or we can watch it on the couch and have a conversation about it afterwards. And I know that doesn't mean that, okay, let's watch Schindler's List right now. You're 3 years old, after all. And I understand that there's a line. But where is the point where maybe – do you think there's a point where maybe you want to show your kids something before you maybe even think they're ready, but it's, oh, I'd rather show it to them when we can talk about it than just have them encounter it whenever?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. I know that I have had this conversation with my husband multiple times, like, when do we talk about this? Because even though we don't feel that technically they're old enough to really understand, if we don't do it, someone else is going to do it. And I know that I, being a bit of a control freak, would prefer to teach them the way I want to teach them rather than let God knows who or what teaches them in a way that I don't agree with. So, yes, absolutely. I do think at some point that is definitely a factor when it comes to that sort of exposure.
Well, let me know what Evan thinks of Fight Club for the next podcast.
I haven't even seen Fight Club yet. So, yeah,
I read the book.
We'll go watch that together, and then I'll send him. He's been asking to go visit you.
Don't actually, for the record. That was a joke. cool. Anything else that you guys want to add, or can we start wrapping up here?
I mean, you could go on and on and on for stuff like this.
Yeah, I just want to say that for me, I do very much appreciate Lewis's point about with everything being so horrible in the world, giving kids heroes to aspire to in a book. I really appreciate that point and completely agree with it.
And I do want to add a final point. Even as I want, of course, the movies to be accessible to younger kids, I've told people when we talk about different fantasy authors, and I say my favorite fantasy authors are authors who fought in the trenches. They're authors who are glad to show beautiful fairy tales while not shying away from the real scariness and ugliness and sadness that really does exist in the world. And that, I think, for a good adaptation has to come through as well. And I'm not saying it's an easy task, but if that didn't come through in a film adaptation, I would also be disappointed on that level.
C.S. Lewis also wrote, "It would be nice if no little boy in bed hearing a sound were ever at all frightened. But if he is going to be frightened, I think it better that he should think of giants and dragons than merely burglars. And I think that St. George or any bright champion in armor is a better comfort than the idea of the police." So, you know, fairy tales have, they're in a weird way, a reflection of the real world, and they have good, bad, dark, light, good, and evil. So on that note, shall we stump an Arnie Weber? And it's actually, I didn't tell you, it's going to be Y-O-U, Fantasia Kitty.
Yeah,
we're going to try to stump right now.
Dodged a bullet.
Because Rillian went a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, I'm 0 for 1, so hopefully I get this one right.
Fantasia Kitty, are you ready?
I am ready.
This question was submitted by Wolf Lover SK, and the question is, the prow of the Splendor Hyaline was modeled after what animal? The Splendor Hyaline being when the Pevensies were kings and queens of Narnia, they had their ship that they escape on.
I'm pretty sure it is a bird. I believe it's a bird. I want to say a swan, and since that's my first instinct, I'm just going to go with a swan because I don't know that I'll come up with the right answer otherwise.
So you're saying the prow of the Splendor Hyaline, the Pevensies' ship when they were kings and queens, was a swan. Is that your final answer?
That is my final answer.
And that's correct. I was starting to make you feel like you got it
Yay!
Wrong. But you actually got it right. All right, 1 for 2
well
now.
Done.
Good job.
Yay.
By the way, listeners, if you think you can stump a Narnie Weber, submit questions to podcast@narnieweb.com with stump as the subject. Please don't include the answer, though.
Please.
Please.
I was going to say, please email the answers to rillian@narnieweb.com.
Oh, that's okay. That's what's going on. That explains everything. Cheater. And obviously, please post a comment below. Obviously, we didn't cover, you know, none of us are like child psychologist experts or anything like that. We're just, you know, fans thinking out loud. So if you
have
any thoughts.
If we have one listening, that'd be cool.
So if you have any thoughts, please post them below. And maybe we'll try to look through the comments and answer as many as we can. And I just really, really want to hear from you. So thanks so much for listening. And thanks so much for being here, you guys.
Thanks so much.
Yeah.